This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 10. Can you guess what it is? Well, if you guess 7, you're in luck. But someday you might not have to guess. You might strap on a telepathy helmet that you could just read my mind. That's what physicist and futurist Michio Kaku predicts. He says that thanks to physics, we have learned more about our brains in the last 10 to 15 years than in all of human history, and with experiments in brain-to-brain communication already underway, how long before our sci-fi dreams become reality? His new book is The Future of the Mind, The Scientific Quest to Understand, Enhance, and Empower the Mind. It's a dispatch from the frontier of neuroscience research. Will we turn our dreams into movies or beam our minds into outer space? And Michio Kaku gives us a sneak peek at some of the sci-fi inventions that might come true. If you want to talk about it, our number is 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK. Michio Kaku is a professor of theoretical physics at the City University and City College of New York, and he joins us here in our studios at the City University of New York. Welcome.
Well, Ira, glad to be on your show.
So you're a theoretical physicist. How did you get involved in wanting to study the brain or in actually going ahead and studying the brain?
Well, my day job is to work on string theory. That's what I do for a living. I work right here at the City University of New York. However, as a child, I was always fascinated by science fiction, telepathy, reading minds, telekinesis, moving objects with the mind, uploading memories, and maybe even photographing a dream. And believe it or not, we can do all of the above now, including reading the number 7 inside your brain.
All right.
If you think about it, we
all
can actually do that.
You can
now
do that.
Yeah.
And what does it look like? I'm serious. Well, if you say we can read it, what actually you're reading? What does it look like?
There are actually several ways to do it. The most comprehensive way is to put your head in an MRI scanner, convert your electrical activity to 30,000 dots or pixels, run it through a software program that then takes these numbers, massages it, and extracts visual images, including dreams. We can now, for example, show a picture of a man's face, like Steve Martin, for example. This has been done. It's on the internet, in fact.
Yeah.
And you can actually see the picture of Steve Martin as it's seen through the brain and a computer. Now, the picture is a little bit foggy, to be sure, but it's on the internet, and you can see that we can actually pull out pictures out of the brain that you're thinking about, not even looking at, but thinking about. If you're thinking about the Mona Lisa, it'll pick out a pretty good approximation of the Mona Lisa. And when you go to sleep in that MRI machine, the machine just keeps on going and will actually print out a rather primitive, I have to admit, rather primitive picture of what you're dreaming about.
Can you store this picture?
Yeah, you can even make a video about it. And it's being done at the University of California at Berkeley, where I got my PhD years ago. And so this is cutting-edge research, the fact that the brain, which is not digital, therefore is very difficult to hook up to a computer, we do it by getting a dictionary. A dictionary so that certain patterns of MRI electrical activity correspond to certain pixels that you see on a photograph. We get this dictionary, and that allows us to, quote, read the mind.
Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of things that you discover? What are some other fascinating things we can do with the brain?
One thing that astonished me was the fact that we can actually record and upload memories. I thought, now, hey, come on, give me a break. That's from the Matrix, right? But yeah, it turns out that just last year at Wake Forest University and also in Los Angeles, they took a mouse, had the mouse learn something like sipping water from a glass tube, and then recorded the signals in the hippocampus. That's a small almond-shaped object in the middle of your brain called the gateway to memory. They simply recorded the impulses going across the hippocampus. Very simple. Tape recorder will do that. Then the mouse forgot the task, and then they reinserted the electrical signals into the hippocampus. And bingo, the mouse relearned that task. At MIT, they duplicated it and inserted a false memory into a mouse. Next will come primates. Very soon, we're going to have primates remember things that they never learned. And then the goal of this is to create a brain pacemaker for Alzheimer's patients so that by pushing a button, you'll know who you are, who your children are, where you live, and where you put the keys. That's the short-term goal. Now, the longer-term goal, you can imagine, inserting large quantities of memories into the brain, that might be possible. In which case, maybe you can upload the vacation that you never had. Or if you saw
you
Arnold
Schwarzenegger. You think you were there, then, right?
Yeah. Or if you're Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie Total Recall, they'll insert the memory of a marriage to Sharon Stone that you never had.
How much is this on the horizon, or are we talking 100 years from now?
What's on the horizon right now is animal studies to create an artificial brain pacemaker. That's the immediate goal, which we already have for mice. Next is chimpanzees and primates. And then, well, look, let's face it. We have to get FDA approval for human trials, maybe the next decade before the first human trials. And then simple memories will be inserted, not complex ones. So the idea of learning karate as a karate master in the movie The Matrix, that may still be decades away. But the very fact that the first step was taken is, I think, incredible.
How far are we from being able to read each other's minds without being in a big machine and recording it and playing it back?
Well, personally, I think that's impossible. When I was a kid, I tried really hard to read people's minds and to move objects with the brain. And I concluded that telepaths may actually walk the surface of the earth, but I wasn't one of them. Mm-hmm. I think it's impossible.
Because?
Because, you see, the brain is a milliwatt transmitter of radio, but it cannot receive and decipher these very faint milliwatt transmissions. You need a computer to mediate the two. However, Stephen Hawking, the cosmologist, has now lost control of his fingertips, so we hooked up a brain chip to his right glass. Next time you see him on television, notice that his right glass, his right frame, has a chip in it. That picks up radio signals from his brain, converts it to signals that a computer understands, and he operates a laptop computer mentally. And the Pentagon is very much interested in pioneering this. Think of the thousands of veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, and they have no arms, no legs. The Pentagon now is hooking them up mentally with mechanical arms, legs, and exoskeletons. Mm-hmm. And at Duke University, at the next international soccer games in Brazil, they're going to take someone who's totally paralyzed, all four limbs totally paralyzed, hook him up with an exoskeleton suit, and have him initiate the soccer games in Brazil. That is the goal of the neurology laboratory at Duke University.
That's like Iron Man, right?
It's right out of Iron Man comics, right? And again, it's being funded by the National Science Foundation and DARPA, a branch of the Pentagon, because of all the wounded warriors from all the wars of the past.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Michio Kaku, author of The Future of the Mind, The Scientific Quest to Understand, Enhance, and Empower the Mind. New things are being done with sight, because our eye is really an extension of the brain, isn't it?
That's right. I just spoke in Seattle, where they're developing the Internet contact lens. That could be replacement for the Google lens. You simply blink and you will go online. And the first people to buy these internet contact lenses will be college students taking final examinations. They will blink, and they will see all the answers to my final exams right there in their contact lens. Politicians will love it. They'll always be on message. They'll always say the right things because they will blink, and the speech is in their contact lens.
So it's like having that little podium reader right in front of you all the time.
That's right. And for you tongue-tied Romeos out there who can never say the right thing at Valentine's Day, you'll have poetry coming out of your mouth because it's all in your contact lens.
That's right out of the movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Somebody's writing the poetry for you.
Yeah.
Is there a limit? I mean, do you think there are limits to what can be done?
Well, I was fascinated by photographic memory. The fact that one child, a bullet went through the left part of his brain. Another kid hit the bottom of a swimming pool with the left part of his brain. Both of them then begin to emerge with incredible mathematical skills of a genius. Now, tonight, after this lecture, do not get a hammer and do not hit yourself on the left temporal lobe thinking you're going to become a genius. But it's happened on a number of occasions, and we've scanned their brains. And we begin to realize that photographic memory really does exist. The guy in The Rain Man, the movie with Tom Cruise,
right.
Ken Peek actually memorized several thousand volumes and could actually recite line by line different pages of the volumes that he read. And when you scan their brains, you find out something rather unusual. This is a theory now, not fact. But we think that they have forgotten how to forget. Forgetting is not a normal process of wearing down memory. The brain doesn't work that way. It forgets because of very complex chemical reactions. They have forgotten how to forget a memory. Therefore, they can remember what they were doing 30 years ago on May 2nd at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they see it with clarity, just like they see today.
But their brain doesn't get overloaded with excess information?
Well, it clutters the mind. One person said it's like having split vision. One vision is what they see now. The other split vision is what she was doing 30 years ago on a Friday afternoon. And she said it gets in the way. It really gets in the way. She wished she didn't have it, actually.
Yeah, because there was some research that came out a week or two ago that said that when people age and they have trouble with their memory, it's not because they can't recall stuff, but it's because there's so much in there as you get older that, you know, they did a computer simulation and the computer with all that stuff couldn't recall it either.
Yeah, it turns out the memory is a very strange thing, but there's a gateway to memory, and that is the hippocampus. There was one famous case of a man named H.M. who had damage to his hippocampus, and he forgot everything except what he was doing at the moment. You would shake his hand, he would be happy to greet you, and then he would shake your hand again and again and again for decades.
Wow.
For decades. He saw himself in a mirror once as an old man, and he was shocked. He thought he was a young man because his memory was frozen as a young man. But then he would forget the memory of looking at the mirror.
Right.
And he'd go back to shaking your hands again.
Wow.
It's so strange that two movies were done about him, 51st Dates with Drew Barrymore, and also Groundhog Day with Bill Murray.
Right, famous movies. All right, we're going to come back and talk lots more with Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at City University of New York, author of the new book, The Future of the Mind, The Scientific Quest to Understand, Enhance, and Empower the Mind. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Our number, 844-724-8255. Don't go away. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about advances in neuroscience. What could today's cutting-edge studies mean for the future of our brains? Michio Kaku is professor of theoretical physics at the City College and City University of New York. He's now studying the brain, and he's got a great new book out called The Future of the Mind, The Scientific Quest to Understand, Exchange, and Empower the Mind. You reference great works of science fiction in your book. Do you think that they're great predictors or motivators for research?
Oh, sure. The greatest astronomer of modern times was Edwin Hubble. He was destined to become a country lawyer for the rest of his life, but he remembered reading Jules Verne as a child. He quit his law practice, went to the University of Chicago, got a PhD in astronomy, and went on to discover the expanding universe, which led to the Big Bang Theory, the greatest discovery of the last 100 years, done by somebody who as a child read Jules Verne. So I think that science fiction is a great motivator. And Isaac Asimov, for me, was a favorite science fiction author to read. And in fact, I end the book on a science fiction story that he wrote about sending consciousness into outer space. I think it is actually possible. And I work out some of the details how one day pure consciousness may explore the galaxy.
Isn't it getting harder to separate science from science fiction? You know, Margaret Atwood, who hates to be called a science fiction writer because she says the science fiction label belongs on books with things in them that we can't yet do. Speculative fiction means a work that employs the means already to hand, and that takes place right here. Would you agree with that? It's harder to separate science from science fiction.
Especially because of Moore's Law, that computer power doubles every 18 months, and all the things about decoding thoughts. In principle, they could have been done maybe 30, 40 years ago with EEG scans, but there were no computers to analyze this massive data coming from brain scans. Now we can. We can get glorious pictures of thoughts ricocheting like a ping pong ball across the brain.
Are we going to be able to ever pass those thoughts from one person to another?
That's the brain net. The brain net is not the internet of digital signals, but the brain net of emotions and the brain net of memories. You can imagine teenagers going crazy on Facebook by sending memories of the first kiss, the first date, the hot party you had last night on Facebook. Kids will love it because they already put emotional little signposts on their mm-hmm. on their tweets, right? Mm-hmm. In the future, they may be able to send memories and think of entertainment. The movies will be replaced by total immersion entertainment, whereby you can actually feel and smell and feel the emotions of the actor or actress.
Are we ever going to be able to capture consciousness?
Well, actually, I give a definition of that in my book, because 20,000 papers have been written about consciousness. Never in science have so many devoted so much to produce so little. And in the book, I actually give you a measurable theory of consciousness, whereby you can rank the level of consciousness of animals, of people, numerically, and it's a testable, falsifiable, and reproducible theory.
Mm-hmm. What about in artificial intelligence? You talk about in the book about the missteps and trying in the early days of computers to try to mimic artificial intelligence, and it didn't work.
Yeah, sorry about that. Even though we have these enormous advances in reading the mind, true robots are still very elusive because the brain is not a digital computer. There's no Windows, there's no CPU, there's no Pentium chip, there's no software. The brain is a learning machine. It's a neural network. And that's why brain research has been so slow. But surrogates, on the other hand, they will eventually take over much of the exploration of outer space. Construction workers, firemen, their jobs will be made easier by robots mentally controlled by the brain. These are avatars or surrogates, and we'll put them on the moon. That's the cheapest way to build a moon colony without having to endanger lives and spend all that money on life support, because robots never complain, they don't bellyache, and they don't have to come back. And you can operate them mentally from your hot tub on the planet Earth.
Are we going to be transferring our consciousness or our brain thoughts and memories into a robot?
That's right. In fact, they can even do that in Japan at a very limited rate. It's called Asimo, the little robot that looks like a little boy. They've hooked up a worker with a brain helmet connected to Asimo, and one day he may go into the Fukushima nuclear power plant and start to make repairs. Robots, as you probably know, have failed at Fukushima because robots cannot turn a screw. They cannot wield a hammer. They're useless inside a nuclear power plant. So why not hook a human who can turn a knob and turn a wheel and send the human-controlled robot into Fukushima? So that's one thing that the United States Pentagon is looking at very carefully. The Pentagon is now funding a crash program to repair the Fukushima reactor with robots.
Our number 844-724-8255, a few minutes to talk with Michio Kaku, author of The Future of the Mind. Let's go to the phones. Mohammed in Wheaton, Illinois. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my call. I was wondering if any of this research with implanting memories has been done on people who are either colorblind or completely blind and implanting memories about color or something like that?
Well, the answer is no. However, in principle, it might be possible. The hippocampus, as I mentioned, is the gateway to memory, and it's rather easy to put electrodes in the hippocampus to measure everything that's going on. Now, of course, we can't read it. We can't decipher this gibberish of electrical signals, but we can record it, and then we can insert it back into the brain or the brain of somebody else, and in that way, perhaps even transfer memory from a sighted person into somebody who is blind. So this has not yet been done, but in principle, it's possible.
Michio, you have such enthusiasm. It doesn't seem like you think anything is impossible for us to do with the brain.
Well, in my book, Physics of the Impossible, I actually do say that certain things in science fiction really do violate the laws of physics. You're not going to be able to see the future anytime soon, and you're not going to be able to get something from nothing. Mm-hmm. Those are two basic principles of modern physics that if you could do, would shatter the foundations of everything we know about quantum mechanics and relativity. But short of those two things, many of the devices I see in science fiction may actually be possible. When I watch a Harry Potter movie, I say to myself, what's possible and what's not possible according to the laws of physics? And I realize that some future civilization may be able to duplicate much of what's in a Harry Potter movie.
Mm-hmm. And the advances in technology and engineering are making these things possible?
That's right. President Barack Obama and the European Union are going to dump $1 billion into the BRAIN initiative to create this disc called BRAIN 2.0. And that will help us understand mental illness.
A disc?
A disc that has not just the genome, but the connectome of the brain. And so if you have a genome on a disc, and the connectome on a disk of your brain, then in principle, when you die, Well, in some sense, your personality, your memory, your personality quirks live on forever as two disks that could be perhaps revived by your descendants. So maybe one day your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandkids will go to the Library of Souls and have a conversation with you.
How soon is this all going to happen?
Of course, we're talking perhaps late in this century. The connectome is not expected to be finished till probably mid-century or late in this century. Let's be real about that.
I think my great-great-great-great-grandchildren may have absolutely no desire to have anything to do with me. By then, even your own kids don't want it. So, going down that way.
You're right.
Right, you're right. Yeah, I know. So where do you see the next, where should we be spending our time in studying the brain now?
Well, I think short term, we have the problem of mental illness, the problem of Alzheimer's, and we see that the afflictions of the brain are very ancient. The Bible mentions mental illness, for God's sake. They are a tremendous drain on the economy and the source of enormous suffering for families. We're going to get a handle on this because of all our advanced technology. For example, schizophrenics hear voices. If you brain scan a schizophrenic, you can actually see that the left temporal lobe lights up because they're talking to themselves. We do that normally, except their brain lights up without their permission. Now, without their knowledge, if all of a sudden your brain or my brain started to talk to itself, we'd say we're mad. And that, of course, is what madness is. It's a miswiring of the brain.
Mm-hmm. And you think that short term, that's where we should be looking to,
that's the
to
goal
work.
Of the President of the United States.
Yeah.
He said it explicitly in the State of the Union last January, that the goal is to cure mental illness with an aging population, with Alzheimer's,
right,
depression, OCD, bipolar disorders. Every family is in the United States, yeah, is touched in some way by mental illness.
Other stuff on the back burner, a little bit of the futuristic stuff on the back burner then?
The futuristic stuff is here right now, the exoskeleton. As I mentioned, we have prototypes of the exoskeletons right now in laboratories across the United States. Johns Hopkins University has perhaps one of the most advanced arms, mechanical arms that can shake your hand, that can fist bump you, that can high five, and it is controlled mentally by the brain.
Well, thank you, Michio Kaku. It's a great book. Future of the Mind, The Scientific Quest to Understand, Enhance, and Empower the Mind. Thank you for taking time.
That's right. And next week, it'll be on number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
Congratulations.